Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Allie Sutton of June.ai coming to us from New York. How's it going, Allie?
Doing well. It's good to be here.
Yeah, great. So you're a New Yorker, so we'll do this in the New York minute. We'll get right to the point, right? What is June.ai?
June.ai is a communication tool that takes in your existing email and recreates the experience for the user to give them more efficiency and control by separating out their conversation, non-conversational email, by organizing all their conversations around people versus threads, by designing their conversations like chat, by giving them more control and the ability to approve, ignore and block new people and companies and contact them, and a bunch of other things that we've built into June.
Interesting. And so I guess what was the core driver? I mean, everyone suffers from email overload, but like, what's the sort of core pain point or problem you're really targeting to start with?
Yeah, there's so many different problems in email. And so for us, we looked at the landscape and spend a lot of time researching all the different problems that really plague people's inboxes. And for us, we approached the problem in terms of solving really foundational elements of email, in terms of really challenging how email works at a core level and building new experiences. So it's not that we're solving one particular pain point, but we're solving a number of them through a number of different experiences. Okay. Whether box overload, whether it be the structure of data and consuming the data, whether it be the formality of conversations.
So give me a little bit of a scenario. For example, we're using Foundersuite email, which is running on Gmail. I usually use the Mac client Mail. And so if someone was to switch to your system, how do they switch and how does it change their flow of how they actually use email?
Right now, they would sign up on our website, June.ai. They'd fill out a survey, which would ensure that June's a really great fit for them. We'd reach out to them and onboard them as a user into June. It's a very quick and seamless process of creating an account on June, linking your email address, and then June handles the rest. June will then take in all the data and intelligently organize it, prioritize it for the user, and then create this new experience for them right away.
So what would it look like when I first come back to it? Everything would be organized by threads in a different way
as soon as you get in, the first thing is that your conversations are separated from all your non-conversational email.
Okay.
Right. And your non-conversational email is placed in a feed, like a Facebook feed, visual cards of consuming that data, whether it's Uber receipts, newsletters, calendar invites, et cetera. And then your conversations are organized by individuals, by people or groups, based on who the people are communicating in that conversation. And then as you get into the platform more and more, and as new people contact you, they come into a place where June asks you whether or not you want to be, whether you want to approve or ignore a particular contact that contacted you or a company that's sending you a new subscription where you can approve or unsubscribe from.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense. What were you doing? Where'd this idea come from? What were you doing before founding June?
So long story short, I started another company called TSG Brands about 9 years ago, licensing and marketing consulting company, and then an investment company called Conscious Equity Ventures. And I was plagued with just being in email all day long, constantly never getting ahead of it, spending hours every day. And then, you know, as many people are, and just realizing that there could be a better way. And then it takes, one of the challenges with email is that it's very difficult to build really, really, really well-built and well-designed email products. So we're excited about what we've built. But yeah, I was feeling the pain and felt that we could build a better and different way.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a pain we all share. I think I have 5 digits of unread emails in my inbox that I just ignore. I do the best I can. I'm on email like you all day long. I do the best I can. That's my approach.
You gotta get into June. It'll make you feel a lot better.
Interesting. I'll check it out. So, good stuff. And you guys have been around how long?
We've been about 2 years.
And is this open availability or is it beta, closed trials?
Right now we're in a public beta. We have about 6,500 people signed up on a wait list, actually closer to 7,500, I believe. And we're onboarding people every week.
Are you going to do, was it Superhuman or one of these email, maybe an analogous company had the whole wait list game they played to get, you know, people really lathered up about it. Are you going to do something like that?
No, I think that for us, it's just about working through some of these early UX and technical issues that we're working through now as we're onboarding new users. We want to open it up to more and more users very quickly. So it's just about working through some of these early issues.
And is this a monthly subscription or are you serving ads in the client
right now,
or what?
Right now it's completely free. There's no ads. There's no cost. And we're not focused yet on the revenue model, but right now it's completely free.
But you'll have to obviously pay attention to that eventually. What are your thoughts on who's paying? Who's the customer, I guess?
Yeah, right now we're not really sure. We have a number of ideas and we obviously know we need to really be focused on that at some point soon, and where we have it on the plan. But right now we're just focusing on building a really great product that provides a tremendous amount of value for a user that they haven't seen anywhere else.
Cool. All right. So let's talk about raising money. So sounds like you raised a pre-seed round a while back. Maybe tell us that you had this idea. You decided let's build a better email client. When did you decide to raise money, or did you bootstrap it at first?
So my co-founder and I came together. He's a really amazing developer, amazing person. We came together to build June. And when we started, we realized, okay, we're going to need a pretty large team and a good amount of time to really build out this product. So we put together a really strong and compelling presentation based on all the research that we've done in terms of what our vision is for June, where we find the pockets of opportunity in the market, and how we felt our go-to-market would really be executed. And putting that presentation together took a good amount of time to really, and a lot of practice, practicing that presentation and that pitch so that people really clearly understood what we wanted to build, and the problems that we were solving, the markets that we were going after, and a bunch of iteration just on the pitch. Would you like me to get into details of that raise?
Yeah, please get into details. I think take us step by step through it, because sounds like you were raising on an idea, a concept. So
yes,
tell us how you did it.
Yeah. So the first step was really putting together our thoughts on what June could be and what we wanted June to turn into.
Yeah.
And again, it was all backed from a lot of research. So once we had that, we spent a lot of time writing our story out, take a pen on paper, just what is our story? And then translating that into some sort of presentation that somebody on the other side of the room could look at us and say, okay, clear vision, clear problem, great entrepreneurs, great development team, and something that they would want to back. And again, that process for us was an iterative process. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't as though we were able to come up with this presentation and knock it out of the park. The first few meetings, I called some of my friends in the venture capital world or individuals, and I asked them to just hear our pitch and give us feedback.
Mm-hmm.
From the first pitch to the last pitch, the first practice pitch to the first real pitch that we gave, the presentation was extremely, extremely different.
Mm-hmm. How many practice pitches did you give before your first real pitch?
I would say maybe 25.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. 25 practice pitches. And that's not necessarily formal pitches with other individuals. We did a lot of practice pitches internally. I would say we did maybe 6 or 7 practice pitches outside of just the internal team.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And heading out there, we put together a list of both individuals, wealthy individuals in our networks, tech angels, venture capitalists that invest in early stage that we knew or wanted to get to, and then started really getting out there in a much more aggressive way to show the industry what we were bringing to market.
So, okay, let's take a bit on that. So putting together this list of investors, it was people you knew. What other sources, how else did you build the target list? Because this is another challenging question. And how did you identify people, if you did at all, that would invest in a concept phase startup? Or did you just go pitch and kind of filter, you know?
Right. There's a few ways. So for us, there's fantastic, fantastic lists out there of the venture capital world. And specifically, there's a great list in New York, which if you want, you could put it in the notes of the video, linking the list, where it lists pretty much most VCs in New York and the different stages that they invest in and the industries that they invest in and the people that run that specific industry or target segment. And for us, that sort of those types of lists were very, very helpful, because planning for the raise is just as important as the raise. So really looking through all the different venture capitalists in New York, all the different angels, understanding the different companies that they've invested in and the different segments or industries they like to invest in, and really coming up with a list of target, because many investors aren't good fits. So mm-hmm. coming up with a list of targets that you want to reach out to. On the angel side, it's kind of the same idea in terms of just looking online for different lists of angels or angels that you may know in your network. I used to go to a lot of angel and tech events to go meet with angels and just to sort of build my network. And there's a ton of different pitch events, and you're able to really get your foot in the door just by going to those events. But aside from that, another really great way to build out your network is to network with other entrepreneurs that may know angels or venture capitalists, mm-hmm. and to be helpful for them by introducing them to potential VCs or angel investors. And then they're more likely than not willing to help you and introduce you to other angels and VCs. That I found is one of the most efficient ways to really build out your network in the early days.
Did you do a lot of that networking and sort of paying it forward? I think is a good phrase to describe that, you know, well in advance of fundraising or sort of around the same time?
I think, you know, I did a little bit in advance of fundraising just by being in the industry, but a lot of it happened after. And I think everyone, you know, the industry is a very helpful industry, and they want to help. They want to help, especially if you can help them. So if you could find ways to be valuable to others, people will find ways to be valuable to you. And that if you're raising capital, building that network and tapping into that network to help you get to more and more venture capitalists is something that's very valuable.
It's interesting. Historically, you think of this kind of pay it forward attitude as, and maybe I'm using my own biases here, but you think of it as kind of being a Silicon Valley thing. I wouldn't ascribe it to like the New York, you know, the New Yorkers, right? So much as like paying it forward, but it sounds like that's kind of spread east. Or maybe it was there all along and I just, you know, didn't ascribe it to New Yorkers. I don't know. Do you think that's a newer attitude in New York?
I hope not, but I think that it's you know, I don't know if it's a geographical attitude or more of a personal attitude, mm-hmm. and in some ways it's a selfish attitude, because the more valuable and helpful you are to others, the more potentially helpful they can be to you.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, I think that if you know, a lot of times when we weren't raising, weren't looking for potential introductions to VCs and other entrepreneurs came to us or me to just see who we knew that we'd be able to connect them. If the company was an interesting company, we were happy to help. Again, it's an industry that wants to be helpful for the most part. And fortunately or unfortunately, a number of VCs put a lot of weight on introductions from other entrepreneurs. So.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a great way to get into those intros. And I think the whole, you know, pay it forward makes a lot of sense, even from a selfish basis, right? Like we have a couple thousand startups on Founder Suite raising money, and a lot of them want introductions, and I'm happy to make introductions. But of course, the ones that I pay attention to more are the people that maybe made an introduction to us, to an accelerator or something, right? That person has an automatic credit. I know this sounds very like mercenary, but they all have an automatic credit in my head, you know, that they did something, and then now I want to repay that and help them out. Like, it's just a good signal. I don't know. It's a, yeah.
Right. So. There's a book, I forgot what it's called, but it talks about the reciprocity factor, I believe.
Sure.
So people want to reciprocate, and they want to be helpful if you are as well.
Yeah. Excellent. So do you remember the name of that New York list? If so, we could maybe put it in the footnotes on the podcast. Yes. Does it ring a bell?
I think VC Finder. It's fairly new, but if you Google it, you come, there's many, many lists.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the problem too. It's like, there's so many stuff out there. It's right. Great when you find the nugget.
But if you sift through the noise, if you sift through it for 15, 20 minutes, you'll find some really, really good lists. And again, the preparation for the raise is just as important as the actual raise.
Yeah. So, okay. So go, any more details on that? You're, you know, honing your story pretty crisply. You've got your team, dev team, entrepreneurs, you know, anything else on the prep?
Yeah. I think that the, you know, one of the things that we, going through the pitch practices that may be helpful, is that we made a list of a few things that we really wanted the person on the other side of the table to really understand about us, right? And after every practice pitch, we would always ask, questions to make sure they understood those few things.
Okay.
Really, really well, in terms of our backgrounds and our credibility. We wanted to make sure that they understood that clearly, that we were able to tackle this problem in an efficient way, that they understood our vision, they understood the problems we were going after. So having that list as kind of like a checklist, okay, now that the pitch is complete, how did we do on how did we score on these items? What needs to be improved to make it much better? I think another thing in terms of actual pitching is that we actually went out there, both myself and my co-founder, on a lot of these meetings, and it's a full-time job. Raising capital is a full-time job, and unfortunately, many aspects of your business will need to take a backseat as you're raising capital. So, it's a challenge, especially from a developer side. The developer side, taking them away from the computer to go raise money is a challenge. So we're trying to, in this new raise, we're trying to really have a good balance there.
Yeah, good. I like that idea of really kind of knowing what your message should be and then asking questions to make sure that message came across. That's pretty cool. Back to the pre-seed though. So again, did you identify investors that you knew were open to concept level startups, or did you just go pitch folks?
No. We did some good due diligence early on to make sure that we were getting in front of investors that were concept level investors, or for the most part, early stage investors. I think that there's so many different VCs that you can meet with. Your time is limited. I've seen some advice, not to meet with any VC firms unless they are in your market, in terms of early stage or at that point concept oriented VCs that will see what we've done, our backgrounds as successful entrepreneurs, and invest. It is, in many sense, it's not, you're not optimizing your time efficiently if you're meeting with a bunch of late stage Series A, Series B, growth stage VCs.
Mm-hmm.
Really aren't looking to invest in our stage.
So is it purely just screening for seed stage, early stage, and avoiding anyone that's larger, later stage? Is that the extent of the kind of screening? Because this is always a question people, like, how do I identify people that would invest in this? You know, I'm very, very early. Like,
right. So I think that there's a few ways. Obviously, it's stage, right? Mm-hmm. So that you could look on these lists and on the VC website and typically identify the stage in which they typically invest in. And the other thing is the types of industries that they invest in. For example, if you know, we're an AI company, but there's a lot of companies there's a few VCs that only invest in physical consumer products.
Okay.
That's not something that, for example, we would want to speak to, and we wouldn't want to waste our time, right, or time for that matter. So it's really understanding the stage they invest in, the types of products and companies they invest in as well, so to see if there's anything complementary to what we're doing. And also for us, it was really about finding VCs based here in New York who could be helpful as we were building out the company.
So how many pitches did you do, and ultimately how many investors came in on that that round, and how much did you raise?
We raised $1.5 million. The amount of pitches, we must have had about 100 pitch meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I think we also got in, I think around roughly maybe 15 to 18 investors, maybe a little more than that, in the round.
Okay.
But it was a lot of meetings. And it was some follow-up meetings, obviously, not only first meetings, but there was a lot of meetings and a lot of really finding our area in the market that really, really understood what we were about and what we were going after.
So 15 to 18 investors. So did anyone lead the round, or was it a party round? Did you do a note or a price round?
We raised it on a safe document with some additional clauses for the investor. Mm-hmm. And there was no lead. It was more of a party round.
How did you create a catalyst? This is another question people always have, is like, you've got this party round of 18 investors interested. How do you sort of create a catalyst to close the damn thing?
Yeah, I think that the, it's a good question. I think that we had an amount we wanted to raise. We went out there to raise it. And I think that the investors we were talking to understood that we needed to raise the capital in order to get started. And after a number of meetings, we found people that believed in us and wanted to get involved in the early stage, coming at the ground floor. Convincing them to invest, I guess once you get a first few people that believe in you and want to get in at that stage, then it's more about, okay, how do we catapult those investors to maybe investors that they know, that they can introduce us to, and just showing some traction in the market with other potential investors and saying, you know, we raised X percentage of our fund, of our full raise, and
mm-hmm.
We'd love to meet with you. And if they see some progress over the few weeks, if you're meeting with more and more and more investors over the few weeks,
yep.
kind of snowball into hopefully getting to your closing position much faster.
How long did it take total?
It took us about 3 months.
Okay. That's pretty quick, actually.
Yes.
Not quick, but it's pretty typical, I think.
Yes. It took us about 3 months, start to finish.
Do you think, so this is a year or two ago, 2 years ago, and you're an AI company, and New York's kind of pretty buzzy around AI. Do you think, how much of it was a function of just being in AI at the right time in the market?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a good answer for that question. I think that we try to leverage our strengths. And that is another part of the pitch preparation, is what are our strengths? What do we want to leverage in this meeting? And what do we want them to understand. So our strengths were that we had a really compelling vision.
Mm-hmm.
We had great backgrounds, again, successful product development and entrepreneurship. And there was obviously a very strong need for a product like this. So we tried to leverage those strengths. Obviously the fact that we were in AI was potentially helpful in opening the doors, but at the end of the day, it's everyone, you know, at the time, at least, and I'm sure it still isn't, everyone's an AI company, right?
Yeah, right.
AI company. So it's, for us, it was more about explaining the how we're going to be building out our neural networks and whatnot.
Yeah, no, I noticed, we have an investor in New York, FFVC, shout out to those guys, but they, about probably around the same time frame, they were kind of identifying or putting out the shingle as interested in AI. And then I saw a lot of stuff at like NYU Labs has an
yes.
AI lab. Like you see a lot of buzz happening there. So
yeah. That's
cool. Yeah. All right, good. So great. So what, now you're raising a new seed round. What are you doing differently? Or are you repeating the process? How are you approaching it sort of for this second round?
I think it's a lot of similar preparation in terms of really practicing our pitch, which we've done, and honing it to a point where the people, again, people on the other side of the table hear and understand our strengths very, very well. Just to come back, if you don't mind, to the initial pitch, one mm-hmm. thing I want to really, really focus on a little bit more is this idea of when you have no product to show, the people need to believe in you as an individual.
And yep.
you know, founders to really make this company successful. Because aside, you don't have any product, you don't have a user, there's nothing they could use or touch or feel to really understand anything. So it's really about making sure that the people on the other side of the room believe in who you are and your ability to execute. So it's a little bit of that is just getting to know the person on the side of the room and them getting to know you, them doing due diligence on you and your network and your prior experiences. So I'm sorry to digress a little bit, but I just wanted to really drive home that point, because without a product, there's not a lot that they can lean on except for your prior experiences and your process.
Yeah, no, it's very relevant. How did you establish that you're a good jockey to bet on? Were you just pointing at your previous company? Did it have an exit? Did it make money for investors? Like, how do you establish that credibility that you're the right guy to fund?
Yeah, I think well, if you're the right guy to fund, then sharing your history, your experiences, and getting to know the potential investor on the other side of the table, that will come out, right? If you're not the right guy to fund, it's hard to really fake that. But if you believe you're the right guy to fund, and for X, Y, and Z reasons, it's a lot of it is making sure that the person on the other side of the room understands your backgrounds very well, what you did to have those successes or failures, what you learned from those failures or successes, and how that translates into what you're doing right now. So that they get a good clear picture of you as a whole person and where you got to as an individual, and how you could use all those experiences to really make this company or give this company the best chances of success as possible.
I think when you're at that stage and it's really about you, not the product, and you're establishing that credibility, it either comes down to what you've done, like a past company or past exit, or what you're doing. And if you're doing, then it's showing traction and progress. And of course, a lot of founders are in the trap of, like, maybe they don't have a previous success or exit, so they're trying to show what they're doing, but they sort of need some money to execute. You know what I mean? It's sort of like this, like, trap.
Yes. I think that I think if you don't have a great background, or if you don't have successful exits or whatnot, then I think if you believe in yourself, which I'm assuming if you're starting this company that you do, then you really want to invite the potential investor to get to know you a bit, to spend some time with you, to really understand you and your vision. Because I think at the concept stage, and that's all I could really talk about it from that perspective, is there's not much that you can really say that you've built already. And it's more about getting people that know you and understand you, that can get to know you and get to understand you over the few week period as you kind of build that relationship with them.
Okay. Yep. All right. I think it's hard to do that.
Trying to answer the best way I can.
Yeah. Well, investors, it's hard to get their attention unless you have previous exits, crazy traction, or sometimes just a big, bold enough vision that'll be enough to get their attention, right? It's like, a lot of what you're talking about is having them get to know you. It's like, how do you get their attention is almost...
How do we even start? I think that I think going to events... Mm-hmm. I would start with your network, the existing network you have right now.
Yeah, who knows?
If you don't have an existing network, then I would say go to events, start meeting entrepreneurs, start meeting other VCs.
Sure.
Get out there in the world to try and build out that network. And hopefully you start to build relationships with people the way they start to learn about you and start to really appreciate you and the value that you could bring to this company potentially.
Yep.
And that's how I would start. If I tapped through my network and I needed to build out my network a little bit more, I would really get out there into the industry. And there's a bunch of different newsletters that get sent every week with different events around the city. Around this, there's Gary's Guide. There's Charlie O'Donnell has he sends out a weekly email every Monday with different events. So there's an endless amounts of events that you could really go to and meet people and start networking, and again provide value to them and hopefully value you, but it's about just getting yourself out there a little bit more and then getting in front of investors.
And I've seen a lot of ways to get investors to know you in creative and clever ways. I've seen people start newsletters. I've seen people start really interesting blogs. Like, I've seen people start events. Like, we did a event series in our early days called Startup Funding 2.0. We did one called Startup Exits. Like, we had some interesting event series that got people to know yes. us even before we really had a good product. So yeah, there's a lot of ways to do that. Cool. So going back to this new round, which you're starting, what are you doing differently? How are you approaching it? Is this a venture round or another angel round?
It's a mixture of both. We're doing our best to try and get investors that can add value. Yeah. We have prepared a list of both angels and venture capitalists that could provide value that we think could be good fits for what we're about. A number of them reached out to us coming out of the launch. We were in TechCrunch and Fast Company and VentureBeat and on Product Hunt, all that. So we got some good traction with some of the early just marketing that we did to kind of get out there. And that generated some good interest from venture capitalists that have contacted us and others that we want to contact. And we're either contacting them through our network, some of the venture capitalists that we've met with previously. Again, trying to be a little bit more focused on people that we think could add value and that are good fits for what the stage that we're in, the product that we've built, and that can potentially see the value that we're bringing to the table.
And the pitch has changed, I'm sure. I'm sure it's still the big vision, the team, but now yes. you have some traction. Is the traction that you have, the 6,500 or so?
No, so we have users in the app now using it day in and day out, and the pitch has changed significantly. I think the first pre-seed pitch was around, here's our vision. Mm-hmm. Here you could understand where we want to go with it. The pitch right now is actually around, here's our vision. Here's step one. Let me show you the product.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me show you the product. We give them a very strong product demo. With the actual product and actually with actual emails and actual communication. And then we show them user feedback. We show them the usage mm-hmm. and using June and loving June. They're in June all day long. Mm-hmm. And this is what they say about us on social media. And this is what the emails we're getting from them, the texts we're getting from them, users that are using it and how they feel about it. So the pitch has changed from one of a promise to more of delivery, plus some promise in terms of where we want to go.
Yeah. Do you think it would be easier to raise money if you waited until you kind of got out of beta and really showed the growth curve? I mean, that's always, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're showing the growth curve now. Mm-hmm. Now that we're out of beta and we're adding more users and users are using it and loving it. So we're showing the growth curve now. I think the idea obviously is that as you continue to progress as a company, you will get more and more traction, hopefully, mm-hmm. and then you will have a much better chance of success raising capital. So the longer you wait, obviously the better it becomes, because hopefully you'll have more traction at that point. But also on the flip side, the longer you wait, the more time comes for you potentially be running out of capital. So mm-hmm. The idea around picking the right happy medium between hitting a certain milestone and feeling good about going out to raise, and then at the same time, doing it with enough traction and at yeah. the same time just being in the right position.
No, that is a good finding that happy medium, like you're saying, between runway and traction. It's right. Sometimes kind of hard, right? It's not.
No, it's not. We had a product that we were testing very early on, mm-hmm. And the idea of could we have raised that to that point, and we didn't want to. We wanted to raise once we had a product that people could use and people loved, and we got to that point. That's when we started raising.
Awesome. Are you in the market now? Are you actually talking to investors, or are you in the prep phase?
No, we're in the market now. We just uh-huh. started, like literally now.
Like this week. Are you running a process, or are you like, how many meetings this week did you have? Today's Friday.
We just started our first meetings on Wednesday and yesterday. So we just had about four or five, and thank God they went really well. And now we have a lot more scheduled, and we're adding more to the schedule. We're in communication with, again, some VCs that reached out to us. We're in the process of scheduling others that we've reached out to them in the process of scheduling all and just putting that all together.
What's your target for number of meetings a week? Do you have a a target for that?
As of now, I do not. That's probably something I should do. That's a good idea. I like the maybe possibly around, I would say around 15 to 20 meetings a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, and just really, we want to get out there as quickly as possible to really batch all the meetings as early as possible to really drive that traction early on and find the investors that really believe in us fairly quickly.
Yeah. And of course, right, today is November, I don't even know what the date is, 13th or something. I guess, any thoughts on seasonality? Because we're
sure.
Thanksgiving's next week, then we have Christmas. Yeah.
A lot of the industry is out next week. We'll be here working on specifically on the raise and other things. But, you know, I think that the is good and bad. You know, obviously the holiday, the new year is coming up in a month and a half. So that's good because it provides like a timeline. Like we want to, you know, close the round. We want to, you know, take in checks by the, you know, by a certain time. So that is like some sort of calendar timeline which is imposed. The other thing is obviously people are out, so it's fairly quick. So it's, again, it's good and bad. It's good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. All right. Any other tips, thoughts, any tips for New York startups that they should check out, groups? We'll try and find those lists. Yeah. Any other things we haven't covered you'd like to share on fundraising strategy?
Not necessarily. I think that I think if you want to raise a successful round, you need to do the things that that set you up to raise a successful round. And so I guess deserve what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Deserve what you want and do the work. And I think that if you are able to do the work and there's so much, I mean, you have some amazing podcasts. If you listen to a bunch of them, you will really glean a lot of insights into raising capital. And you will get a list of tasks that you need to accomplish, some of which I spoke about and some of which other people spoke about, that it's just about doing the work.
Yeah.
If you do the work to the best of your ability, hopefully you'll find the success.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's good. If your startup is fundable, then it's just a function of doing the work, putting in the prep right. work, the research, building the target list and getting out there and hustling. So
whatever you want.
All right. Good stuff. Well, have a great Thanksgiving. Appreciate it. If people want to learn more, can they sign up for the beta on June.ai or what's the wait list look like?
They can sign up for the beta on June.ai. Tweet at me or at the company to get bumped up the list.
What's your Twitter?
June, JUNEDOTAI.
Say it again. JUNE.
DOT.DOTAI.
Got it. Okay. What's the wait list? How long is the wait list or how long would it take, like timeline to get into it?
It depends on the individual and their profile. So fill out the survey. So we can just make sure June's a really good fit for you now. There's some really prime experiences that June really works really well for.
Gotcha.
And we're really building around those users initially.
Awesome. All right, Ali, this is great. Well, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for your time. And good luck on raising this new round. We'll catch you after it's done, okay?
You got it. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Bye.